the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's prophet, and the progeny of Allah's messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
وَرَحْمَةُ اللَّهِ.
Peace be upon the Imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, His select, His party, the case of His knowledge, His argument, His path, His light, His proof. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon them.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's great to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, the divinely appointed Imam from the household of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. Of course, we find that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, he talked about a lot of different things. He talked about akhlaqi, moral and ethical issues. He also talked about social affairs. He talked about cultural affairs. He talked about political affairs. He also talked about jurisprudential and fiqhi matters. All of these things being these different pillars of the holy and blessed religion of Islam. Now, one of the things, of course, which was kind of prevalent at the time of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, was this idea that certain people would go and work for the governmental establishment. Now, because the governmental establishment was so vast and great, there was a lot of job opportunities with the Abbasid governmental establishment. But the only problem was that this governmental establishment, really from top to bottom, was very unjust and oppressive and extravagant. And in many ways, it was a very un-Islamic oriented and un-Islamic system that was in place. And of course, the benefits and the advantages to this system would go to the Abbasid caliphs, not really the divinely appointed imams and the people who were given the position of leadership and khilafah and imama by the Almighty Allah. Now, in such a situation, we find that one of the companions of Imam Hadi alayhi salam, he asked him a question in this dialogue. The companion's name was Muhammad bin Ali bin Isa, and he asked Imam Hadi alayhi salam, you know, whether it was okay to be able to work with this Abbasid governmental establishment. And of course, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam had told him that if you are being forced to work for the governmental establishment, then Allah will forgive you. But if you are working for the establishment on purpose, then this is forbidden, unless you are in some way or form helping the Shia and the religion of Islam, then it is perhaps permissible to be able to work for these governmental organizations. Muhammad bin Ali bin Isa, he then says something that's really interesting and is really what we want to discuss. He says that, I want to work with them, the Abbasid governmental establishment, to cause them trouble and to take revenge on them through being close to them. Meaning that he wants to work for the governmental establishment of the Abbasids in order to cause them trouble, to do some kind of harm on them, or to take revenge on them. And apparently, according to Muhammad bin Ali bin Isa, the only way to take revenge on this governmental establishment, which has usurped the divinely given right of the imams, is to be close to them. And Imam Hadi alayhi salam then replies and he says that whoever does this kind of work, this is not unlawful, but rather they will be rewarded by Allah. So kind of this idea that if we are working for these kind of governmental establishments, then we need to be of benefit to the imams, we need to be of benefit to Islam, and we need to be of benefit to the other believers, the mu'mineen and mu'minat. We need to be of benefit to Islam and the muslimin and the muslimat. And it really only when we are beneficial to Islam in some way, shape, or form, then does this kind of legitimacy come about when it comes to working with these oppressive and cruel governmental establishments. Otherwise, we are being a part of a system, we are being part of a machinery which its output is cruelty and oppression. So I guess in the present day, it's like saying, you know, we're going to go work for the Israeli government or the American government or the British government or the French government. Unless you are tangibly bringing some sort of benefits to Muslims or to Islam, which in a vast overwhelming majority of the cases, this is not what is happening. Muslims and Islam are not benefiting from these people's work in these countries' governmental establishments. But if they are, then that's fine. Otherwise, we should be very careful where we go to work and who we work for, because both our dunya, this world, and the hereafter, the akhirah, all depend upon these kind of decisions. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Hadi, alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
In a poignant display of solidarity, Christians residing in Pakistan have opted to hold traditional Christmas celebrations with simplicity due to Israel's ongoing onslaught in Gaza. Their decision is a symbolic gesture of empathy and concern for relentless challenges faced by the people of Gaza during this festive season.
The message of Jesus Christ was the message of peace and security. We need peace in Palestine. On this Christmas, our hearts are heavy and we feel compelled to express our brothers and sisters in Gaza.
Pastors from various Christian communities across Pakistan gathered in the capital city Islamabad on Sunday for a special joint prayer meeting to appeal for a ceasefire in Gaza.
In the spirit of Christmas, we gather here to raise our voices in prayer for the innocent lives affected by the conflict in Gaza. Our prayers are with the people of Palestine, and we stand united in our plea for a ceasefire and lasting peace.
Meanwhile, a diverse gathering of people also expressed solidarity with the oppressed people of Gaza through the display of vibrant balloons, each carefully adorned with messages of solidarity and support.
The situation of Gaza is extremely distressing. It is genocide, it is violence, and it is extreme power play in a region that does not deserve this at all.
Ceasefire now!
Demanding an immediate ceasefire, the individuals of all ages called on the world to halt the ongoing genocide of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip.
Christians in Pakistan are using this Christmas to advocate for peace in Gaza rather than engaging in traditional celebrations. The gesture underscores that humanity is not confined by religious or national boundaries, but it is all about showing compassion for the people in distress. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
For the 11th weekend in a row since the start of Israel's most brutal war on Gaza, rallies were held in Sydney and Melbourne in support of Palestinians. In Sydney, thousands of people gathered once again in Central Business District's Hyde Park for a rally dubbed Stop the Genocide in Gaza, called by the Palestine Action Group, an activist formation committed to supporting Palestine and opposing Israel apartheid. A number of other groups also joined the rally, calling on Western governments to finally put some pressure on Israel for its ongoing violence, genocide and oppression against Palestinians.
And the Australian government continues to be a firm backer of Israel, to their great shame. So clearly, again, 11 weeks of massive protests, the likes of which we've never seen before, is having an impact, and they're feeling the pressure, so they're shifting their rhetoric a bit.
The rally, attended by school union representatives, was also joined by a group of outraged Sydney-based Jews who hold anti-Zionist views.
The so-called posture of the Western countries and so-called international law is, in my opinion, just pointless. And it's appalling, but quite frankly, we've got a genocide happening right in front of us.
Some of the speakers acknowledged that Palestinians are experiencing the same struggle as the indigenous people in Australia. Many hundreds of thousands of Aboriginals have been killed or forcibly removed from their land and their families at the hands of colonial authorities over the past 200 years. People at the Sydney rally praised South Africa for filing a case against Israel at the International Court of Justice, accusing Tel Aviv of committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. More than 21,500 civilians have been killed by the Israeli army so far, including nearly 9,000 children and 6,500 women.
I mean, it is genocide. They should go to the International Criminal Court because they are committing war crimes. War crimes many, many times over. I mean, it's obvious, you know, this is the obvious to ordinary people that this is a massive ongoing war crime.
Also on Saturday, a rally in solidarity with the Gazans was held at Melbourne's State Library for the 11th week in a row. Max Civili, Sydney.
In response to the call of the Free Palestine Movement, massive crowds gathered in the Yarmouk refugee camp near Damascus to show their confidence in the strength and determination of the resistance in Gaza, confirming that the Al-Aqsa Flood operation is a fateful battle that ignited hope in their hearts, as it brings them closer to the defeat of the Israeli occupation and their return to their homeland.
We are here to support people in the Gaza Strip and voice our unconditional support to the resistance groups. After nearly 3 months of fighting, it's clear that the Zionist regime is facing defeat. The Al-Aqsa Flood operation revealed that Israel's collapse is imminent.
The Israeli occupation politically has nothing now, military has nothing now, security has nothing, economy has nothing, and we also tell the world that October 7th is the gate for the liberation of the whole Palestine, from the river to the sea.
Participants confirmed that the excess of resistance embraces the Palestinian struggle and supports all resistance factions, including the Al-Qassam Brigades and Al-Quds Brigades. They expressed their anger at the Israeli atrocities against the people of Gaza, emphasizing their adherence to the right of return and liberating Al-Quds.
Syrians and Palestinians have shown their absolute faith in the victory of the Resistance Front and Al-Aqsa Front operation, not only as a path to liberate the occupied lands, but also as inspiration for the generations to come. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Thousands took to the streets of Austria's capital, Vienna, to express solidarity with Gaza on Saturday. These demonstrations were special in the sense that they were the first street protests after a court ruling removing some restrictions on acts of solidarity with Palestine. Since October 7, police and government have been imposing strict sanctions on protests and even banned expressions of solidarity with Gaza entirely. Following a demonstration on November 5 in the city of Salzburg, charges were filed against participants who held signs showing Palestine in its pre-1947 borders. Police argued the banner constitute a criminal offense due to incitement to hatred for denying the Israeli regime's right to exist. The tide has now turned. The court dropped the charges a few days ago, arguing they violated freedom of expression. It ruled that it is lawful to carry signs showing maps of Palestine at demonstrations. The ruling comes only days after similar verdicts in Germany, where courts in Cologne and Munster ruled that the slogans "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," "Child murderer Israel," and "Stop the genocide in Gaza" can be freely expressed in the country. German police have previously used these slogans to prohibit protests for Gaza, creating worries that the free speech is under threat.
I'm here because I feel a duty to stand against the destruction of life, the environment, and dignity, because this destruction is being done in my name. And instead of making me safer, it's making it more dangerous for me to live in the diaspora.
While their governments stand staunchly on the side of the Zionist regime of Israel, thousands of people in Austria and Germany keep marching for Palestine. Experts say these demonstrations have placed some real pressure on European governments, pushing them to distance themselves from Israeli atrocities.
The court rulings are a welcome boost for the Palestine solidarity movement in Europe, where concerns are growing over a crackdown on Palestine supporters. Following recent court decisions, it is believed the coming year will see more and more demonstrations for Gaza. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
Iraq is marking the fourth anniversary of the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. During an event attended by high-ranking Iraqi and Iranian officials, the two commanders were prized as a role model for all generations.
Today we stand alongside our Iranian brothers to remember our leaders General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, whose memories are engraved in our minds. And although they are gone physically, their thoughts are still with us.
Former Iraqi Prime Minister Nour al-Maliki admired the two leaders and their role in the fight against terrorism in the region. The chief of Iraq Popular Mobilization Units, Faleh al-Fayyad, also addressed the ceremony. He said the role of General Qasem Soleimani and his companion was essential in standing against Daesh. Several Iraqi lawmakers were also present at the event. They said the two commanders' determination to fight against terrorists irritated their backers.
Today we remember the pure souls that fought against terror and defeated something that made terror supporters mad. That's why they committed such a cowardly act of killing our leaders in Iraq.
They expect that by assassinating our leaders, they will weaken our resistance, but they have failed to achieve their goals, and even after committing their cowardly act, it did nothing more than adding strength to us.
The attendees also condemned the latest attacks on anti-terror forces in Iraq and Syria, which led to the martyrdom of Sayyid Razi Mousawi. They demanded an immediate end to the U.S. military presence in Iraq, and they argued that this is the only solution to stop the continuous attacks on Iraqi forces and end violations against Iraq's sovereignty. They also expressed their solidarity with the Palestinians and condemned the Israeli war on Gaza.
A huge crowd have gathered today to commemorate the fourth anniversary of the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Al-Haj Abu Mahdi Al-Muhandis. The legacy of the anti-terror icons continue to live on, inspiring people in the region to stand up for the oppressed. Muslim Salim, Baghdad.
The journalists have found themselves stalked by the indiscriminate Israeli strikes, which so far have claimed the lives of over 100 journalists working for different media agencies across the globe. Journalists believe the regime is deliberately attacking them and that they are paying the price of covering the Israeli massacres and atrocities committed day and night in Gaza and putting on display the really brutal face of the Israeli occupation. This undoubtedly has limited the chance of the Israeli propaganda machine to whitewash the murder of Palestinian children and deceive people outside the occupied territories on what is really going on.
The Israeli occupation is still practicing this genocide against the Palestinian people generally and the journalists particularly. Till this moment, the Israeli army has deliberately killed 105 journalists who were doing their job of covering the Israeli crimes. And the reason behind that is to curb the coverage of Israeli crimes. In addition to that, it destroyed 96 media agencies in Gaza.
The sufferings of the Palestinian journalists in Gaza are not limited to the Israeli attacks. They are also grappling with the disastrous humanitarian conditions they are experiencing along with their families. Many of them lost their houses to constant Israeli bombardments and joined the displaced people in Gaza, who are estimated to comprise over 80% of the region's population. All they have now are small tents created of pieces of plastic, wood, and fabric, or at best, classes in the Nahrawa schools, which are supposed to be safe, but have been repeatedly targeted by Israel.
We, the Palestinian journalists, consider ourselves standing on the same front beside the resistance members on the battlefield. Our battle is to show the world the reality of Israeli massacres despite the ongoing crimes against journalists and the catastrophic humanitarian conditions in Gaza. As you see, I live here in this press van. It's really hard to fulfill your basic needs even when it comes to going to the bathroom. My family fled to the schools and they faced the same hardships.
Journalists in Gaza have to deal with many problems when trying to prepare a simple report on the situation in the Strip. Many cannot even find a chair or a desk, and hence they cannot perform journalistic tasks smoothly, making matters worse. Most of the time there is no internet in the Strip, and journalists cannot communicate with the world.
As a Palestinian journalist, similar to all my colleagues, we live in a very complicated situation. Even though we are chased by the Israeli strikes and killings, we find ourselves obliged to forget about the difficulties we face in every aspect of life due to this onslaught for the sake of reporting the truth. I assure you that every single one of the 2.3 million Palestinians here has his or her tragedy, and this includes us. Our daily life is horrific and unimaginable at all levels.
Like all the other Gazans, many Palestinian journalists in the besieged district have been killed brutally by the Israeli bombardments, and those who are still alive continue to suffer from the unlivable conditions in the region. Mutia Abu Msabih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has slammed Israel's assassination of senior Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps advisor Sayed Radi Mousawi in Syria. Hezbollah called it a flagrant and brazen attack and a transgression of borders. Deputy head of Hezbollah's executive council told Press TV that General Qasem Soleimani had predicted that Sayed Radi would be assassinated in the battle to liberate al-Quds.
His martyrdom was only a matter of time. He was a man who had spent his youth on sacrifice. He was always ready to offer whatever assistance was needed to the resistance groups. This assassination will not stop the path which Sayed Radi al-Mousawi has opened for us. It will not stop us and other resistance groups in the region from continuing to walk in this path. We will remain on the battlefield to face this enemy which is occupying and looting our land. And with the blessing of the martyrs, the future will witness a new victory for the resistance in Gaza and the region.
Palestinian resistance factions Hamas and Islamic Jihad also said in a statement that the assassination of Brigadier General Radi Mousawi on Syrian territory is a crime and a cowardly act that threatens security and stability in the region. The Palestinian resistance groups lauded Sayed Radi for his role in supporting the resistance in Palestine.
We know that he was very close to General Qasem Soleimani and therefore worked closely with the Palestinian resistance groups and all resistance groups in the region. His efforts were based on the same school of thought as General Soleimani, and he walked in the same path, which they had opened together. Today, we can see the result of these efforts in Gaza and the West Bank.
The Iranian cultural advisor in Beirut said General Mousawi was considered as a man who devoted his life to the Palestinian cause and finally sacrificed it for the sake of Al-Quds.
Sayed Radi Mousawi, God bless his soul, was one of the great leaders in the IRGC who devoted his life to support the honorable resistance in the region, especially in Lebanon and Palestine. Therefore, he is a part of every blessed bullet or rocket that is being fired to target the criminal Zionist regime, whether in Palestine or Lebanon.
Sayed Radi is now seen as a regional leader and martyr, just as General Soleimani. He is regarded by many as a martyr in the long battle for the liberation of Al-Quds. On the martyrdom anniversary of General Qasem Soleimani, the resistance front has bid farewell to another leader. Sayed Radi Mousawi's role in supporting the resistance groups of Lebanon and Palestine was significant. However, for the resistance, martyrdom is another form of divine victory. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
بی خودی خوراکی ها و فرض کنید حیواناتی که حلال گوشت هستن رو که خدا بی خودی که خلق نکرد.
Allah had a purpose behind the creation of food, sustenance and halal meat. The main purpose for their creation is to enter the body of a believer and to change into righteous deeds and positive energy to be used in the way of helping the people. This means that even the flesh of the animal and the vegetables that we eat are getting perfect if they enter the body of a believer. The food that we eat as a believer is changed into energy to be spent in worshipping Allah.
خدا رحمت کنه مرحومه ایت الله میرزا رحیم ارباب رو از بزرگان اصفهان از عرفای با عظمت بودیشون.
The late Mirza Rahim Arbab, the famous Iranian mystic, used to clean the vegetables very much softly and with taking much care. When he was asked about spending so much time for cleaning the vegetables, he said, I fear that on the Day of Judgment, I am asked by an unnoticed leaf of vegetables that why didn't you let me enter the body of a believer so that I get perfect too? This means that even a leaf of vegetables can get to higher degrees if it enters the body of a believer. Thank you very much, dear listeners of Arab English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.ir Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزای لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
in the limelight.
The Zionist regime deliberately destroys archaeological and historical monuments in the Gaza Strip and explicitly targets Palestinian cultural heritage. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Monitor wrote, the Zionist regime army has destroyed more than 200 archaeological and ancient sites out of 325 that were registered across the Gaza Strip in the course of its devastating onslaught since October 7th. Authorities in the enclave said recently, as Anadolu Agency reports. The Gaza Media Office said the sites include ancient churches, mosques, schools and museums, and other different historical and archaeological sites and monuments. It said in a statement, the ancient and archaeological sites destroyed by the army date back to the Phoenician and Roman ages. Others date back between 800 BC and 1400, while others were built 400 years ago. The Great Omari Mosque, the Byzantine Church in Jabalia, the Shrine of Al-Khadir in Deir al-Balah city in the central Gaza Strip, and the Blachia Byzantine Cemetery, the Antedon of Palestine, northwestern Gaza City were among the sites. It noted that other sites were severely damaged, including the Greek Orthodox Saint Porphyrius Church, the 400-year-old Al-Saqqa House, and the Sayyid Al-Hashem Mosque, which is one of the oldest mosques in Gaza. Geneva-based rights group Euromed Monitor said on November 20 that the Zionist regime deliberately destroyed archaeological and historical monuments in the Gaza Strip and accused it of explicitly targeting Palestinian cultural heritage. Gaza is an ancient and historic city that came under the rule of several empires and civilians, including the pharaohs, the Greeks, the Romans, the Byzantines, then the Islamic Age, among others. Since October 7th, the Zionist regime has continued relentless attacks on the Gaza Strip, killing at least 21,663 Palestinians and injuring 55,918, according to local health authorities. The Zionist regime's onslaught has left Gaza in ruins, with 60% of the enclave's infrastructure damaged or destroyed, and nearly 2 million residents displaced amid acute shortages of food, clean water, and medicines. According to Middle East Eye, a new report suggests excavations of discoveries dating back to the Iron Age have been seriously harmed by the Zionist regime's actions in Gaza. One of Gaza's most important archaeological sites has been largely destroyed by the Zionist regime's invasion, according to a new report by Forensic Architecture. The investigative organization used open source and satellite imagery to show that the site located near Al-Shati refugee camp had been hit by bombings and then bulldozed for what appears to be a military camp. The imagery also reveals the development of the Zionist regime's water pump infrastructure in and around the site, nominally for the purpose of flooding tunnels. Forensic Architecture said the site had been excavated between 1995 and 2005, and that among the items discovered were an Iron Age rampart underneath Achaemenid period houses, Roman and Hellenistic era structures, including an emporium, a tiled fountain on the coast, and a Byzantine cemetery in the north.
In a statement, rights group Al-Haq said the destruction of the site was a deliberate attempt to deprive resources indispensable for the survival of the Palestinian people in Gaza that serves Israel's colonial project, reinforcing its apartheid regime by erasing Palestinian identity. Targeting cultural heritage is not an empty gesture. Culture constitutes a visible expression of human identity, said the organization. Depriving a people of their culture is tantamount to emptying them of the very substance that forms the backbone of their right to self-determination, especially in a context of culminative, interconnected, and systematic human rights violations. The group warned that Israeli regime bombardment had destroyed churches, mosques, hammams, and other important historic architecture. According to Press TV, from corpses lying unattended on the streets to hospitals and schools reduced to rubble, to children made orphans and tens of thousands of people rendered homeless, the gory events unfolding in the besieged Gaza Strip since October 7th are a textbook example of genocide and ethnic cleansing by the Zionist regime. Almost all hospitals and medical centers in the Gaza Strip have become defunct due to infrastructure damages as well as the lack of electricity and fuel to keep the essential services running. Schools and universities have also been bombed. Bakeries remain shut. Almost all refugee camps have been rendered uninhabitable due to random strikes, forcing the majority of the population to sleep under the open sky amid heavy winds and heavy downpours.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrowshahi.
Shaheed Muhammad Baqir Al-Sadr.
He was born in Kadhimiya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was.
When we look at the works of late Rawzati,
there is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamari that he says in Farsi, "Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid."
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRI, the English Radio Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program The Teacher, an introduction into the religious and scholarly life of the most outstanding Shiite dignitaries all across the history of Islam. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio, there are two special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Sheikh Fadai. Sheikh Fadai, salam alaikum.
Salam alaikum wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, salam alaikum to you.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about an outstanding Shiite faqih and muhaddis of the early 3rd century Hijra. He was among the companions of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam and Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, also a wakil, or we can say an executor to Imam al-Hadi in some of the regions of the Shiite and Islamic lands, Ali ibn Mahziyar Ahwazi. Of course, there are two Ali ibn Mahziyars, you know, which have to be differentiated. I hope that Sheikh Fadai and Sheikh Rouhani give us more details about these two names. Sheikh Rouhani, let's start with you, brother. Give us some details about the early life of Ali ibn Mahziyar Ahwazi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ali, son of Mahziyar Ahwazi, belonged to Ahwaz, a city in nowadays Iran. He was among the jurists and narrators, muhaddisin, and of course among the, leaders of the Shia in that area, living in the 3rd Islamic century. And this great faqih and muhaddith had a great status and position in the eyes of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam. Particularly, he was among the companions of Imam al-Jawad, the ninth infallible Imam, and Imam al-Hadi alayhi salatu wasalam. He was called Abu al-Hasan. His technical name was Abu al-Hasan, and also Ahwazi. It is the very interesting point that could be mentioned about him is this, that his father was a Christian man, and later they converted to Islam, and he also accepted Islam and became among the very close, companions of the Ahlul Bayt, among the true followers of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salatu wasalam. And this Ali ibn Mahziyar had very good relation and contact with Imam al-Jawad, alayhi salatu wasalam, and also Imam al-Jawad praised him.
That's right.
These great jurist and muhaddith.
Yes.
And he was buried in Jajarm or Ahwaz. There are two places related to him, but Jajarm is most well known as the grave of these great jurists.
That's right. The holy imams used to select some vakil for themselves. There was a system of vakala on that time, and Ali ibn Mahziyar was among the close companions of Imam al-Jawad and Imam al-Hadi, and a vakil to Imam al-Hadi. What does it mean when we say he was a vakil to Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In Ziyarah Jama from Imam Hadi, one of the titles that Imam alayhi salam gave to Ahlul Bayt is Sasatul Abad. Sasa, if you want to translate it in the contemporary English, we can say politician. It means the Ahlul Bayt try to control the lives of people in Shia in the best way in order to guide them to the way of have. So one of the ways to have control, of course not the wrong control as the kings did, the right and have control on people, was this vakala. What does it mean? It means that imams at that time, they were not free to do whatever they like. Like Imam Hadi, for example, and Imam Askari, which were called Askariyain. So what does it mean, Askari? It means that they used to live in a military camp and base in order not to have access to them. Because of that, you know, they were not neglectful of their Shia. Imam were under the control of the king, but he didn't stop. They had some representatives in different regions of Asia, different countries, in order to do their job. They were in a prison, like military camp, but they did their job. They never stopped.
Because they were under the control and surveillance of the rulers on time.
We can pose this question. Imam Hussein alayhi salam stood in front of Yazid. Uh-huh. He had a war. Because of that, he was martyred. So it is clear. The reason of martyrdom were clear. But what about Imam Hadi? What about Imam Jawad, Imam Askari? What we see, apparently, is that they didn't stay in front of the kingdom. But what is the reason that they were killed?
Uh-huh.
One of the most important reasons is that the wakala.
Uh-huh.
They had a great power all around the region by the tool of their wakils.
Yes.
But, you know, they were imam's hand.
Uh-huh.
They did the jobs of imam. Okay. And they started, they...
Somehow like a representative.
A representative,
yeah. That's right.
Because of that, after a while, usually kings realize that now it is getting dangerous.
Uh-huh.
Because this wakala could gather power for imam. Uh-huh. And maybe it is close to stay in front of us.
Yes.
When they felt that this is dangerous, they decided to kill imam.
Mm-hmm.
So Ali ibn Mahziyar was one of the wakils.
Yes.
It means that they were the hands of imam.
Okay.
To do imam's job in different... at that time, he was in Iran.
Yes.
The region that now we call it Iran.
Yes.
He was wakil of imam in Iran. It means that Shiites in Iran were controlled by imam.
Mm-hmm.
They were not alone. They were not abandoned.
Yes.
Imam was in a prison, in a military camp. But the Shia society was controlled by imam. But not directly, indirectly. This is the role of Ali ibn Mahziyar, which is so important.
Also, there were some terminology, they call it tawqi'. So whether it was an answer to a question or a query or some, for example, orders to some people and the companions.
Because they didn't have direct access to Imam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
La ilaha illallah. What about his scholar life? And Sheikh Rouhani, just before that, the scholar life differentiate. This is not the same Ali ibn Mahziyar who recognized and understood the presence of Imam As, isn't it?
Yeah.
There are two people by this name.
Yeah, there are two people. One is Ali ibn Ibrahim Mahziyar Ahwazi, the one whom you referred now,
yes,
who saw Imam Al-Asr Arwahu Rafida.
Yes.
And he was living at the time of Ghaiba.
But
this,
right.
This Ali ibn Mahziyar Ahwazi was among the companions of Imam Jawad and Imam Al-Hadi.
Hadi, that's right.
Yeah, of course, it should be mentioned. That Ali ibn Ibrahim Mahziyar is also very much well-known visitation to Imam Al-Asr Arwahu Rafida.
Okay.
About the scholarly life of this Ali ibn Mahziyar Ahwazi, the things that we can mention in terms of worshipping Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it is said about him that he was performing sajda that long that in which he prayed for tens of the mu'mineen. Even sometimes says that 1,000 of mu'mineens, he prayed for them and then raised up from the sajda. That's why this kind of long sajdas he made in his life, that is really interesting that to be mentioned.
Yes.
And also about his knowledge, it is said that he was among the mufassirin, among the commentators and interpreters of the Holy Quran. And he wrote more than 30 books and treatises regarding the Islamic teachings and doctrines. And of course, his name is mentioned in the chain of transmissions of the 437 Riwayat.
Yes.
And Ahadith.
Okay.
And of course, there are nice letters written to this great alim and scholar, we can say. One is from Imam al-Jawad, alayhi salatu wasalam, to this man, in which Imam al-Jawad praised him and appreciated him and made very nice du'as for this person and recognized all the efforts he made for the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salatu wasalam. Writing that we know that during the nights, during the days, always in the cold and the hot weather, always you try to help us, you try to spread out teachings, and we notice that, we know that. That's why we pray for you. Imam al-Jawad says that we pray for you that on the day of judgment, on the day of resurrection, you will be resurrected in a way that all the people love you and regret your position and your status. Imam says that I am completely satisfied with you, and may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala would be satisfied with you.
Yes.
And may Allah, inshallah, as Imam says, that will resurrect you on the day of judgment among the people of paradise. These are the nice du'as made by Imam.
Very good.
About this Ali ibn Mahziyar Ahwazi.
That's right. Some faqih books are also Kitab al-Salat, Zakat, and the Kitab al-Sawm, and different, we can say, subcategories of the Shiite and Islamic fiqh were composed by this outstanding man. When I was reading about his life accounts, one interesting point was his debate with Ali ibn Isbat. You know, there was a debate between the two. The two could not reach an agreement, so they went to Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, and then Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam defended the sayings of Ali ibn Mahziyar against Ali ibn Isbat, who was believing in a mazhab which is called Fatahiyya. They believed in the imamate of Abdullah, son of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, so they called themselves Aftah or Fatahiyya. But Imam Jawad alayhi salam negated all of them and supported the ideas and the claims of Ali ibn Mahziyar. Really outstanding and active man in this field of study. Okay, Sheikh Fada'i, your final remarks regarding his life.
There is a lesson for us, our duty in front of Imam Zaman. You know, we read in the history that Ali ibn Mahziyar was the representative and wakil of Imam. It means that he reached a position that Imam trusted him and used him as his representative. So that is the duty of a real Shia. As my brother mentioned, Imam Jawad prayed for him. And he said, Imam Jawad said about him, I haven't seen anyone like you.
Yes.
You tried a lot for us. You see, Ali ibn Mahziyar did his best for Imam. Whatever he could do, he did that.
Yes.
He never stopped. He never stand in the way. And if we want to be a real soldier of Imam Zaman, there shouldn't be any difference between absence and presence of Imam. Imagine that now Imam Zaman is present.
Uh-huh.
So can we be someone like Ali ibn Mahziyar? If we are doing that, it means that if we are doing our job, our duty in front of Imam, we can be another Ali ibn Mahziyar.
Uh-huh.
But if we think that, no, we are waiting for Imam Zaman, so what is the meaning of intizar? What is the meaning of waiting? Waiting means doing nothing, just sitting in the way and watching for the way in order that someone arrive. This is not the waiting for Imam.
Yes.
You know, intizar means to do whatever you can for Imam, so at the time that Imam arrives, will choose you as his Ali ibn Mahziyar, as his wakil, representative.
Yes.
We can be like him. Why not?
Again, we must say that the Ali ibn Ibrahim ibn Mahziyar, we can say had the chance of visiting Imam As, is very much different from this one. They're from the same lineage, the same family, but too important. In the public culture and the literature of the Shiites, the second one, that is Ali ibn Ibrahim ibn Mahziyar.
The first one is uncle, the second one is nephew.
Nephew, that's right. It's very much famous. That's right. All right. Thank you very much. There are some tombs attributed to Ali ibn Mahziyar in Ahwaz and Jajam, you know, in southern Iran. The exact year that he was passing away is not known, and nothing is documented in the history of Islam about him. But as the wakil to Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam and Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, and among the generations of the Fuqaha, the time of Imam, his life account is fruitful and outstanding. Thank you much, Sheikh Fadai and Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the life of Ali ibn Mahziyar Ahwazi. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstudy.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.